the Prasangikas would say, well, you know, you have to be in a sense that, in a self in a sense that satisfies only when it's not analyzed. You can't be a self that is established in any way in its own right, either from the ultimate point of view or the conventional point of view, because if you were, you'd be holding on to that self, and you wouldn't be able to flow freely through the flow of experience. So the issue that lies behind this funny little intramural dispute between the Prasangikas and the Swatantrikas, the two branches of the Madhyamaka school, is really a dispute about selfhood, and in the end it's a dispute about freedom. How you can define for yourself philosophically what it means to be free and still an active and serious participant in all of the experience that we share. This is the Madhyamaka school, the school of the middle path, and it is, I think you can say quite confidently, the fundamental position of the Tibetan tradition. It's a position that is shared by all Tibetan schools in one way or another, without exception. Now, the second major school in the Indian tradition, the second major interpretation of emptiness, the second variety of Mahayana philosophy, is known as the Yogacara, or the Yoga Practice School. The Yogacara school was founded in the 4th century by Asanga, Mahayana philosopher, with help from his brother, Vasubandhu. Like the Madhyamaka, the Yogacara school had a long and active history in India. At the beginning of the 7th century, it was carried to China by the Chinese philosopher Xuanzang, where it had significant impact on the tone and orientation of Chinese Buddhist thought. We'll talk more about the Yogacara when we get to China. Now our job is to understand it as an Indian school. The Yogacara took a position that was quite different from the Madhyamaka. Instead of using a doctrine of two truths to understand emptiness, the Yogacara used a concept of three natures. This was their vision of reality. They thought of ordinary experience, the flow of sensation, the flow of sound, the flow of visual experience, as dependent nature, a kind of reality that arises dependently. Ordinary experience, they said, depends for its existence on a beginningless series of momentary causes and conditions. In some respects, this ordinary experience is real, and in some respects, it's unreal. This is the Yogacara version of the middle path. In some ways, it's there. In some ways, it's not there. Let's ask first how it's not there. The unreal aspect of dependent nature, the Yogacaras called imagined nature. This consists of the concepts and distinctions that we impose on the flow of experience. All the different ways we slice up ordinary experiences conceptually to distinguish one thing from another. This is unreal, they say. The real aspect of dependent nature goes by the name perfected nature. This is the mind itself, devoid of all of these imaginary distinctions. Another name for perfected nature is emptiness itself. Now, the Yogacara philosophers expressed this concept, of three natures, in a series of verses. These verses were meant to be memorized as the boys memorized their texts in the Tibetan monasteries and then quoted in debate. To our ears, they sound clumsy and obscure. Often they're quite condensed and seemingly quite technical, but they're quite precise and rhythmic in Sanskrit. And I'm going to quote a little Sanskrit to you to show you that that's the case. In English, one of the most important verses sounds like this. The imagination of something that is unreal is real, but the duality in it is not real. The emptiness in it is real, however, and it is real in emptiness.